is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Players. I'm just going to say this guy's name. We'll go back in time a little bit. But J.J. Redick, you worked with the Clippers and worked with them a little bit. We're talking. I said, J.J., if you could recommend to kids these days, what would be one thing you could recommend? He goes, oh, it's very simple. Think every play that you're running is for you and run that same speed that you think it's for you.
Dr. Bob Grzanik has a Master of Science in Health and Human Performance and is a certified performance coach. Dr. Bob specializes in Oriental medicine, flow states, sports medicine, and energetic technologies. For the past 20 years, he has been serving athletes of all levels in achieving peak performance, injury prevention, and rapid recovery. He has worked with organizations and athletes from the Seattle Seahawks, Seattle Sounders, Detroit Pistons, Memphis Grizzlies, Sacramento Kings, Los Angeles Clippers, Portland Trailblazers, Philadelphia 76ers, Milwaukee Bucks, Chicago Bears, New England Patriots, Cincinnati Bengals, Dallas Cowboys, Cleveland Browns, Seattle Mariners, San Diego Padres, Philadelphia Phillies, Roma Soccer, University of Washington Football, Soccer, Track and Field, and the U.S. Women's Soccer Team, in addition to many individual professional, college, and Olympic athletes. By combining Eastern and Western healing modalities, Dr. Bob has discovered new ways to optimize the body's energy system to improve performance, increase efficiency and consistency, enhance recovery, and give teams the competitive advantage of having healthy players. He's a pioneer in the area of in-game enhancement as a player performance consultant. His clinic is in Bellevue, Washington, and he travels extensively throughout the U.S. to work with athletes, coaches, and teams.
Hey, Hoopheads, practice like the pros this July with our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Save up to $4,000 on multi-unit orders in the month of July. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Rob Brost, head boys basketball coach at Bolingbrook High School in Illinois, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads mentorship program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Have a notebook handy as you listen to this episode with Dr. Bob Grzanik from the Energetic Sports Lab.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. But I am pleased to be joined from the Energetic Sports Lab, Dr. Bob Grzanik. Bob, welcome to the Hoopheads Pod.
Thanks for having me. Hey, I want to give a quick shout out to a person that passed away about 2 weeks ago, Dan Potofsky, former Kent State Hooper. What do you got for me? What do you got for me, Mike?
I know Dan. I knew him from way back and knew a bunch of guys in his family.
that long time officials, guys that you know, they went to Jeff Potopsky went to North Royalton, played against him back when I was a kid. So yeah, a lot of connections here in Northwest Ohio for the Potopsky family for sure.
So my grandfather was his coach. I always talked about, we called him Big Dan. I think he holds still a record for most points in the game at Kent State, like 49 or 48. I think he's in it for the top, I don't know, four or five highest games. But my grandfather always said, he goes, you know, Dan, he goes, you might be 6'3 or 6'4, but look how high his hips are. So I mean, always made me think about guys with high hips. So I just want to give a shout out to Dan. He passed away, unfortunately, but great human being. He became a mentor to my uncle, who was also kind of a mentor to me. So I just want to start with that one. It's a blessing to the basketball gods.
Absolutely. I mean, I think when you look at people who have kind of been a part of the Kent State basketball family, and then of course basketball here in Northeast Ohio, I think that's a prominent name that we've all come in contact with, that with the Potopsky family at some way, shape or form over the course of our time. And as you and I talked in our pre-podcast call, you and I have a lot of connections. We think, I don't know if we're 99.9% sure that at some point we met up on the basketball court in the now long defunct Ohio games, which were kind of like an Olympic style festival back when, I don't know, you and I were probably in our, I don't know, early 20s, maybe is when that was going on. Just, man, basketball was so, it was so different back then compared to what our kids experience today. They didn't get the opportunity to play outdoors and play as much pickup ball, certainly as you and I did back in the day.
Big time. That's a great awareness about people playing, actually, like just playing to play. And then you go play to play. So you go play at some other park in the same day.
Yeah.
You have a trainer that trained you all day. Whatever that means.
Yeah. That did not exist in any way, shape or form. It was just which asphalt parking, which asphalt court was I going to next, and who was going to get in the car and drive there with you? And could you find a game? You had to start to figure out, well, here's where the good games are on Tuesday night. And here's they are on Sunday night. Where are all the players going to be on this day? And can we get into a gym? Which it was a lot harder. It was a lot harder to get into a gym when you and I were kids. Those things were locked up tight. Whereas now kids see a lot more access through AAU and practice, and kids being able to work on their game indoors, as opposed to, I'm sure, what you and I did, which is just being out on our driveway or going and playing pickup ball for sure. So for people who don't know, you grew up in Massillon, Ohio. So just tell us a little about your athletic background growing up with hoops, and just a little bit about your experiences as a kid.
So a quick one, I actually grew up in Independence, Ohio. So my grandfather was a superintendent. Quick story in that, he used to play for the Cleveland Browns. And he went to, at the time, I think it was called Case or whatever it was called. They used to play like in the Sun Bowl. So one of his teammates was Bill Belichick's dad. And so I used to call my grandfather, Josh. I said, Josh, can you tell me about Belichick? And excuse my language. He goes, toughest son of a bitch you ever played with. He'd bite you in the pile, hit you in places you wanted to be hit. So that guy was tough, but he goes, he knew the game. So him and my grandfather used to talk a lot. So my grandfather was a very good coach in Independence, in the Hall of Fame, all that stuff. So when I was younger, he used to get me into the gym all the time. And then my uncle was also a very good player at Independence, went on and became an All-American track runner at Ball Mall. So I remember I was a freshman down in Massillon. So we had moved a few times. I moved to Detroit, then moved to Detroit there, then we moved back to Massillon. And my uncle goes, hey, we're going to play hoop this time. And I'm like, play hoop against who? So it was Tom Tupa in his guys we hooped against.
There you go.
And he's like, he goes, hey, that kid's not bad, man. So Tom. So I remember that. I was a little kid. I was in eighth grade. So I still got a few buckets. So I played at Massillon Jackson High School. I had a very interesting injury when I was a ninth grader. I started to dunk like at the end of eighth and ninth grade. And I don't know, man, 32, 36 inch vertical. Who knows if you're jumping or whatever. But after football season, I was playing against the varsity guys. And I'm pinning shots on the backboard, you know, tip dunks, things like that. The same night, like you and I were talking, one of my buddies goes, hey, we're going to play at Doug Smith's house. Okay, I'll be over there. So this one guy starts calling me white chocolate, and I get mad. So I start blocking shots. And I'm like, dude, don't call me white chocolate. But I blocked a shot, sprained my ankle, and it was the size of a pumpkin. It was huge. So that's going to be in the story about when I worked first with the Milwaukee Bucks, I worked on ankles. So I'm kind of like the ankle whisperer from that experience. But I was still a very good basketball player, played at Jackson, it was all league, blah, blah, blah. Went on, played at Baldwin Wallace College and played out. I ended up playing out in Whittier College. I ended up there. My highest scoring game, I think, in college was like 26 games in Hawaii. I was kind of that guy where you're like, where do I play this guy? You just should have played this guy. Also, a side note, in high school, I did not wear glasses but needed them. So my senior year was the last year before there was the three-point shot. So I got contacts, and I became a flamethrower shooter, man. But I was noted as a rebounder, just a tough player that, I mean, I could pass all that stuff. Blah, blah,
all right,
blah.
Let me ask you a question. Why didn't you wear glasses before you got contacts? What was the aversion to wearing glasses while you played?
So I thought I could still see well. I didn't know any better.
My son is going to be a junior this year, and he needs glasses, can't see things far away. And
Get him,
we
man.
Right, and we started, we're like, man, I wonder how much better maybe he'd be if he could actually see. And so actually it's funny that you say this, because yesterday he went and got contact lenses. Now he hasn't played in them yet. Tomorrow will probably be the first day that he plays in them, but we're both curious to see whether it makes any difference. So interesting that story popped up here and now, because like I said, it was literally yesterday.
Oh no, it helped out dramatically, but let me go back for a second. So my senior year, Stark County a little bit different than, say, Summit County, Cauga County, a little bit different. So we had some pretty good hoop teams back in my day, like North Canton, Hoover had some good teams that went down to state. So we had a new coach my junior year. We were 16-6. Three losses were to the same team. They beat us by 7, beat us by 4, and beat us by 2. My coach, shout out to him, Larry Taylor, goes, I want to get those son of a bitches. I thought to myself later on when I grew up, I'm like, T, if we didn't have to play, we could have played him later. He goes, I just wanted to beat him. I was a little bit too fired up as a coach. But also my senior year, probably our claim to fame was we beat Barberton. They were 19-0. They came to our place. And I remember my mom goes, hey, you can sleep in a little bit today. You got a big game. And I drove to school, and it's like I looked at the sun, and I kind of went, this is going to be an interesting day. It was like a blissful thing happened. I just kind of went, wow. So that always sticks in my mind as something that occurred in my life. I always go back to that time frame about, wow, something's going to happen like that. It was just this beautiful experience, and we ended up beating them by, I think, 6 points. I think they had one of the Robinson brothers on the team.
Probably had Kenny. Probably had Kenny, right? Kenny Robertson?
Yeah, it was.
Ended up in Cleveland State.
You got it. So after the game, their coach comes out and me, you son of a bitch. But I'm like, listen, we just played a game. We're going to beat you. You're not going to come in and just beat us. I mean, come on. So it was a very interesting experience, but hardcore playing, things like that. It was a lot of fun back in the day.
What did you think you wanted to do when you went to college? What was your idea of where you thought you'd end up career-wise?
So that's an interesting one, because you know everybody that plays basketball thinks they can play in the NBA, right? So
absolutely.
I want to play overseas, right? So I always thought, I can play in Europe, I can play over in Australia, blah, blah, blah. But my grandfather was a wise man. He goes, listen, he used to call me Bobby. He goes, Bobby, he goes, you know, you can do that stuff. And he goes, why don't you get a really good education? And you can do that stuff after your education. I'm thinking, like, what does that mean? Give up some time. So it made me think. So I went out west, and I originally was a psychology major. Then I became a biochemistry major. Then I wanted to get into biopsychology. I had all these crazy things. But as my uncle told me, he goes, you could have been a 4.0 student, but you're always studying stuff that was never in school. And I said, yeah, but that's where all the fun is. That
right, exactly, is, exactly. Man. Yeah, absolutely.
So I had a great – I ended up going to a little school in California called Whittier College, and you could start your own major. So I met this – I had a mentor. His name was Dr. Morris. He goes, Robert, because I don't think you should go to medical school. I was going to go to medical school. He goes, I don't think you should go because you're all about helping people. And not in a bad way. He goes, medical school is all about death. He goes, that isn't suited for you. So I kind of went, Dr. Morris, what? So he goes, why don't you and I sit down and do an independent study for a whole semester and just talk about how people have healed throughout time? So we would do this. It was on a Friday. And the whole biology staff would come in and we would just talk about things. It was the best time I ever had in college as undergrad. I mean, we'd just sit there. We talked for hours. But what we came across was, hey, Native American people, people in China and India have been healing people forever without science. So I kind of went, interesting. So he goes, hey, why don't you go talk to all my doctor buddies. And this guy used to write for the MCAT. Smartest man I ever met. Note, was from Ohio State where he got his PhD. So note that connection there. And he goes, go talk to these people. And they're all like, kid, don't do it. It's not what you think it is. It's all about managed care. It's not about helping people. You get people after the fact. So I kind of went, what? But this one guy goes, hey, go see this old doctor of acupuncture. You might like this guy. So I go see this guy. When I first meet him, he goes, hey, in ancient China, the doctor would pay you if you got sick, but you had to listen to him. He goes, you heard what I said. And I kind of went, what? So my Dr. Morris guy goes, hey, take a little seminar from this guy. And since that time, honestly, I've never worked a day of my life. My job is like a hobby.
That's really cool. I think when you get an opportunity to do something where that's the way you feel, it makes it completely, like you said, you're in that state where, hey, I'm doing what I do and I don't have to worry about making it feel like work. And I think that's something that, right, a lot of people aspire to. A lot of people wish that they could get to that point where they're not working. They're just doing what it is that they love to do. It sounds like you had some good mentors that pointed you in the right direction. What do you think they saw in you that made them realize that sort of this path might end up being a good path for you? What was it about maybe your personality or just who you were at that time that good made question. Them recognize that in you?
I was very curious, but also very caring. But also note what you just said about, you know, getting into your process of what you love to do. You tell me how it's any different when you play basketball and you're having a great game. There's no difference.
It's not.
There's no difference.
Yep.
But people don't understand that because there's always this struggle or reaction. I'm like, that doesn't have to be there. When you cut through the struggle, you have a release and you get into flow. That's what life's about. So that's what I've been getting into. And again, I was very blessed with when I moved to Seattle and went to school, an acupuncture school. I was playing hoop in this league and I was on fire, man. And I maybe wasn't the highest jumper, but I could jump twice as fast before a guy could jump once. And this guy's like, man, he goes, where are you from? And I was joking around. I said, I'm from Earth, man. And he goes, okay, Earthling. And this guy was a coach named Harold Wright, who coached at a place called Rainier Beach, which is a very predominant school out in Seattle. And he goes, hey, what do you do, man? He goes, you do acupuncture. What is that, man? I told him, he goes, we got some kids that are banged up, man. Why don't you come down to Rainier Beach and help us out? And I'm like, okay. And just as a side note, I had a mentor in acupuncture school that used to run a black and blue clinic for football players at a local high school on Saturdays. So back when I was in acupuncture school, I took all the energy points, there's 360 of them, and I put them all into a sports framework. Probably the first guy that ever did that, probably the last guy too. So I could literally, if a guy had an issue, I could help that out with an injury, but I could make you run faster, jump higher, do all kinds of stuff. And my mentor was like, come on. So I did it on this kid one time. True story, he scored 6 touchdowns. He goes, what are you doing? So I go back down to this gym where Harold Wright is, and he goes, hey, this is Dr. Bob. He'd currently be the third best player on our high school team. I think to myself, what are you talking about, third best player in your high school team? And it was funny, I was ranked, right, as I walked into the place. He goes, well, Timmy Ellis, he's going to go to Kansas State. He's better than you. And we've got this guy named Jamal Crawford who this guy's going to be a pro, man. I'm like, who's Jamal Crawford? So I see him play, and I go, this guy's pretty good. So me and Jamal have been friends since 1999.
That's very cool. Very cool to be able to get those opportunities to interact with guys, especially when you're getting them before, right? Before they go big time, and you get an opportunity to build that relationship. And obviously with the success that you were able to have and to be able to demonstrate the value of what it was that you were doing. What was your first job that you got a paycheck for? Did you start your own practice? Were you working underneath somebody? How'd you get your first paycheck?
Good question. So my mentor at the acupuncture college had me work with him, and he goes, listen, after 6 months, he goes, hey man, you have a gift, go start your own place, have a good time. But he linked me up we had a clinic right next to a gym. I would really work on people in hoop. So my practice in 1 year ballooned because of all the hoop connections. So it was pretty interesting, man.
So when people came to you at that point, were they coming more for injury rehab or for performance enhancement at that point?
At that time, it was injury rehab. But see, so people did. So I have to educate people about, oh, well, you know, you're coming in like this. So kind of imagine you're kind of like your normal, like a line. You come in to see me, you're below the normal. I can get you above your normal, but people wouldn't know it. They'd be like, I came in to see you, and I kind of golfed the best game I ever golfed. Like, you know, what just happened to me? So I realized from my work in undergraduate school, and then when I got my doctorate in acupuncture, that studying all the acupuncture points, I'm a very good pattern discriminator. I can just sense things in people where I can do certain points where you'll jump 2 inches higher in a game. So people would come in and be like, yeah, I can't believe how good I feel. So that just kind of bloomed. And then I started working with more teams. And then when I work with more teams, I would see more patterns. And then I don't know the exact number. I'm not a numbers guy, man. I just like having fun. I think I've worked with 11 or 12 state championship basketball teams in the state of Washington, probably three or four second places, and unfortunately some fifth place finishes. But I can really assist kids or people to play better, because what do we know about the game, right? You just think it's all physical. No, what's that mental game going on? And most people don't know how to do that mental game. They don't talk about it. So I'm always curious about an example for you. So when you played your best game, what was going on? Give me a little story. When you were playing your best, what was going on?
I think the best, when you think about the best games that you've ever had, you don't think about really anything, in all honesty. You're just kind of playing and it just feels natural. And I think for me, when I go back and look at my playing career and I think about when I played well, whether it was in organized basketball or whether it was in pickup basketball, it's always like, hey, my shot's going in. It, you know, you get that feeling of, hey, the shot feels good. It feels like I don't have to think about it. I know I'm putting it up there and I know it's going to go in. And then on times when you're struggling, that's when you start to break down and think about your mechanics. Oh, I got to get more elbow lift, or I got to follow through, or I got to keep my guide hand off the shot, or whatever it might be. So I think the answer to your question is, when you're playing well, you're not focused on what you're doing, if that makes any sense. You're just going, kind of going out there and letting what you've always done and what you know how to do just flow naturally through your body, as opposed to when you're not playing well, it feels like you're struggling and you're having to think through everything that you're doing to try to figure out and fix what's wrong. Versus when you're having a great game, everything just seems to be going right. But it's not because you've analyzed it and figured out, okay, here's what I have to do. It's just what happens, if that makes sense.
Oh, without a doubt, you're free. So my question for you would be like, how many good games did you have versus bad games? What percent?
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I think if you look at it over the totality of about like a high school and college career, I mean, I'd like to think that, depending on how you define good, I'd like to think that probably I had 80% of my games I would consider to be probably good games. And good being could be a bunch of things. It may not be that I shot perfectly or whatever, but there was different things that I contributed. And then it's funny because I probably remember maybe not the bad games, but the really bad games.
Yeah, no, for sure. Because those things really bad. Like,
yeah,
like what
really
happened?
Yeah, the really bad games you remember. And I remember like the aftermath of having played the game and then sort of my reaction after the game and where I went, and what I did, and how I sulked, or how I tried to figure out what I was going to do next. And those are the ones that, I mean, clearly the best games, I remember those very, very clearly. I had a game in college where I made 9 threes against Air Force at home at Kent.
And, oh, wow.
And that's a game where like everything I put up, I think it was 9 of 13, but it just felt like everything I put up was going to go in. And
did you make your first one?
I couldn't tell you, but
I'm just curious. Sometimes people get that first flow and it's like, you're shooting like a feather. You're like, whoa, what's this going in?
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely no doubt that you have days where I remember that even more vividly, less in organized basketball and more in like playground basketball, where, you know, you can show up to the park and it just feels like the ball's going in. And then that feeling sticks with you all day. And then there could be other days where you show up and you're like, man, something just feels wrong. It just feels off. And even when you make one, it doesn't feel good. And conversely, when you're going well, even when you miss, those misses still feel good. And
yeah,
you know, that's just again, I don't know what that is. That's clearly there's something mental going on in addition to the physical.
Well, I figured it out at some level. It's actually brain waves, but it's a deep conversation. But there's something called a flow cycle. So there's a guy named Milan. He just passed away, so blessings to him. He has a name like Milan Chilovskovsky. In 1990, I started studying him, and he goes, there's this thing called flow where people just do stuff, and they just love to do it. And I'm going, that's most hoopers that love the game. You just love to do it. It's called an autotelic personality. You just do it because you love to do it. So that's who I am. I didn't know I was that. But in this flow cycle, you have a thing called struggle. It's like, okay, I'm going to struggle. But then can you get through a release? And then can you get into a flow, and then can you regenerate? So I'm very good at, when I do acupuncture, things I do with people, I can get them out of struggle as soon as possible. And they're like, whoa, what just happened? It somehow frees your brain with these brain waves. And there's another concept of this thing called this endocannabinoid system. I think you said your dad was a former physiologist. So
yep.
This endocannabinoid system, it's a very interesting system. It's been around for 600 million years old. It's in all invertebrates. It was only discovered in 1995. So I started talking to people. They're like, come on, what is this thing? So I'll give you an example. You know, we all know the runner's high, right?
Yep. I never experienced it.
Well, that's good. And it means you're a sprinter then. I'm not a runner either. I'm a power guy. So note that. But this runner's high, people thought were caused by endorphins. Okay. It's actually caused by these endocannabinoid system. People are going like, what? So it's always interesting what we think about is going on in science. It always changes. So once you get that flow going, you're in that zone, man. But also go back to some of those games you had, how you had to struggle and work harder, but yet you still felt good. Like, it's good to grind, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you look at, I guess I equate some of my best games with tremendous effort, but effort that was not, I'm not sure the right way to say it again. I think I keep coming back to that. I keep coming back to the word flow, right? It's like, I'm working hard. I'm busting my tail. And that's part of what it means, at least in my mind, what it means to play well is I'm giving great, great effort. And I think one of the things that's interesting, because as a player in high school, I think most people would probably say, well, Mike's a better offensive player than he is defensive player.
Yeah.
And then when I got to college, I looked around and I said, well, we got a lot of guys on this team that can score, but man, maybe if I'm the best and the toughest defensive player, maybe that'll allow me to get on the floor sooner. And so I kind of figured that out and sort of reinvented myself. And I equate that with not any type of physical talent, because unlike you and your 36 inch vertical, my vertical was like 18 inches. So I wasn't out quicking anybody or out jumping anybody in order to be able to do the things that I did on the floor. I had to work and grind and understand and just put some toughness to it. And so I equate that effort with the best games that I've had.
But note, though, I got injured. So just note that.
There you go.
You get injured, just being honest.
That's true.
But also note that effort was always energy. So I always talk to people at any level, how do you put in the effort, whatever that means to you, to know that you're connected to the game? I want to be connected where I lose myself, but I'm still in it. There's also a thing called fake hustle, where people just run around crazily. And it's like, that's really not anything that's doing anything. You're just running around. You look like you're doing something. So.
Yep.
Is it controlled? Are you connected? And you were very wise to understand that. Because when you get to college, you're kind of like, man, a lot of dudes can score. Not many want to play D.
Yeah.
Still see that a lot, man.
That's advice. Yeah. I mean, it's advice you try to give to. Anytime I'm talking to players, that's one of the things that I think players, they don't always understand is you got to figure out what your coach wants. And you got to figure out and understand that there's more to – everybody wants to score, right? Everybody thinks that, hey, what are coaches looking for? They're looking for the kid who's scoring the most points. And in today's day and age, they're looking for the guy that's going to bang home the most threes. And yet I talk to so many different college coaches at every level, and all of them talk about the need for guys who share the ball, who are great teammates, guys who have a high basketball IQ. And those are things that I think kids – sometimes forget in their quest for the way the world is today. Everybody's on a mission to try to get a scholarship. Instead of enjoying the moment, they're just so focused on what's next and trying to get a scholarship. And they have this idea that what coaches are looking for is the high score in every game. When in fact, you talk to so many coaches and they're like, yeah, look, scoring. I mean, we need guys on our team who can score, but there's so many other things that you can do on a game of basketball that impact winning. And so many kids forget that. And I think that's something that we've tried to do on the podcast when we're talking to people and draw that out from coaches. Said, hey, when we're recruiting, we're looking for not just guys who can take 25 shots a game, but we're looking for guys who can really impact winning in lots of different ways.
Oh, big time. So that gets into like, I mean, there's nothing better than a good pass you throw by somebody's head and the guy can't catch it and the guy catches it for a layup. I mean,
yeah.
Those are things that people have lost that it's like, a good pass is something, but it's like kids can't pass these days because they're not playing like 3-on-3 like you and I used to back in the day.
Well, they're just working on skills. They're, like you said earlier, they're with a trainer. And so they're working on skills in isolation so often. And I think one of the things that if you look at, you go back to when you and I were playing and you look at guy 10 or 11 or 12 on your high school team.
Yes.
And those guys, a lot of cases where maybe you had like the 6'2", 225 pound football kid who just went in and set screens and bulldozed people and got a couple of rebounds. And
yes,
those kids were not nearly as skilled as player 10, 11, or 12 are today on the back end of a high school roster. Like everybody, you go to a gym and you just watch kids dribble and shoot the ball, and their skill level is amazing. And yet I still think that in some ways the basketball IQ is maybe not quite as high in some places, because kids don't, like you and I learned from playing against older guys, right? I mean, you grew up when you're playing against, you're 15, you're playing against high school varsity players, or you're playing against college guys, or you're playing against adults. And those guys are showing you like, hey, here's what you got to do if you want to win. Cause you got to stay on the court in the playground pickup game. Like my son or my daughters who've grown up, they're always playing against kids their own age. Like my son started playing travel basketball in third grade, playing against other third graders. Then he's playing against other fourth graders, and he's playing against other fifth graders. And so you never really get that opportunity to play with older guys to kind of show you, hey, you got to play a role on this team, or you got to figure this out. It's just, it's interesting the way that the game has evolved, and there's positives to the way it's evolved. And I also think there's some downside to it. And I'm glad I grew up in the era that I did, is what I always say.
Oh, love that. So think of it this way. How many defensive specialists are out there that you send your kids to? Hey, we're going to go to defensive camp today.
Nobody. Or moving without the ball, right? How many people?
Yes, but think about, these are businesses you could open up. Hey, we're going to have a defensive thing. So not jumping in, what you just said, that was a big red flag for me, moving without the ball. So I've done a lot of work with a lot of NBA teams, a lot of players, but I've worked with a few interesting players. I'm just going to say this guy's name. We'll go back in time a little bit. But J.J. Redick, he worked with the Clippers and worked with them a little bit. We're talking. I said, J.J., if you could recommend to kids these days, what would be one thing you could recommend? He goes, oh, it's very simple. Think every play that you're running is for you, and run that same speed that you think it's for you. And I kind of went right there, man. So everybody's moving around, just not sitting around. You're actually running a play. And what do we know with today's game? Isolation, one-on-one, people just watch. That bugs me, because a lot of people watch the game. They're not in the game participating.
Well, think about how the Warriors play, right? And how Steph Curry plays, and how unique his style of play is, when theoretically every player should be trying to emulate his style of play. I mean, think about trying to guard him. And that was one of the things that I think, when I look back on my career, we talked about my inability to jump or my inability to be quick. But I was a kid who, even though I like, if you tell me to go out and jog a mile, I'd be like, that is so boring, I don't want to do that. But if you put me on a basketball court and say, hey, run at whatever your top speed is for 40 minutes, even though my top speed might be lower than yours, I'm still going to be running my top speed in minute 37 compared to somebody else. And I'm going to keep moving. That was always an advantage that I had. And I think when you have less physical tools and gifts, you'd have to figure out and find, okay, what can I do to maximize what I do have? And that was something that I was always able to do really, really well. And I think it's a skill. Again, it's not a skill that, I mean, it's something that's controllable.
But note, though, that you were able to be aware of that,
right,
and tapped into it. So note your IQ of awareness was extremely high. A lot of people don't have an IQ. They just want to shoot the ball, do that. And you watch kids play, and you're like, what is this kid doing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not good or bad, but also think about back in our day. I'm going to say this is kind of a weird comment, but I think we had better coaches because we had more team time than, say, these individual trainers, blah, 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 where you had different sets you ran. You did different things that it made you think about things. So I really got into it a few years ago. I did some work with some, a little bit off topic, but some NFL team, and I'm like, they should be in the friggin' Super Bowl. And it made me mad because if I went back in time, the coach messed up, not the players. It made me realize that coaches need help. So I went back, got a master's degree in health human performance with an emphasis on coaching coaches to coach better. And so I go through this whole little deal with coaches about when you coach your best. And they always go, interesting question. So you ask certain things like situations. Like I can tell a good coach by their out of bounds plays. That's one of my things I look at. Good out of bounds play, coach got something going on. Because a coach actually changes things up. You can't just, I use an analogy like you're watching tennis. You just can't go back and forth. You have to micromanage the game, but not too much. Some people control too much. I'm a little bit more like, hey, let the players play because they can figure it out.
It's a fine line, right? That's the art of coaching.
Without a doubt.
Is trying to figure out how much control do I have/need versus how much can I cede to the players. And then clearly, if you're going to cede more control to the players in the game, then you have to have put the time in practice to be able to help them to understand and make good decisions. There's clearly been a trend in the game of basketball in terms of coaching going back probably in the last, I would say, probably 5 to 10 years. There's been a huge transition from using the idea of block practice and just doing repetitive, I'm doing this same thing 15, 20, 25 times in a row, sort of in isolation, versus I'm playing and teaching the game out of 3-on-3 in situations, and we're playing 5-on-5, and maybe we're playing a game to 5 with 3s and 2s, or maybe we're playing only on one side of the floor and every single play has to start with a down screen. And so you're trying to teach the game and make it look more like the game, but that's a more, I don't want to say it's not necessarily a more difficult way to coach, but it requires you to be able to cede some control to your players as opposed to having 4 lines and having kids making a move around a cone and then going to score, which looks neat, but it doesn't always translate to learning.
No. So I got caught. I can see coaches that sometimes you think they're good coaches, they're just good trainers, not good coaches, not good or bad. So it goes back to that deal. You know, it's like you can take a horse to water, you can't make him drink the water. If I teach a man to fish, he can catch his own fish. But I'd ask you if you were a very good team leader, because it sounds like you kind of led the team or had some of that mojo going on that you would call people out. So you also, when you start watching maybe high level basketball, maybe kind of like good high school basketball, how vocal are people on D? Are they communicating to each other? You know, what's going on? To me, that's like an orchestra conductor. Once you get that going, man, it takes over for himself. So if you're a good coach and you teach your pupils well, they're going to figure it out themselves a lot.
That's a great point. I think it's something that it's hard to get kids to talk. You think about the way you and I grew up versus the way they grew up, where so much of my kids, I have a daughter who's going to graduate this year from high school, and then my son's going to be a junior, and then I have a 7th grade daughter. And them and their peers, so much of the conversations that they have are not necessarily even them speaking to one another. It's just them typing on a phone. And so you think about that verbal and that communication piece that you're talking about, to be able to communicate on the court, on the field, is something that I'm not sure, it doesn't come naturally to most kids. Even back when we were playing, I think it was still something that coaches, if you'd ask any coach, they want their kids to communicate more. So I think it's always been an issue, but I think it's even more of an issue now, where coaches have to be super intentional about trying to teach what that looks like and model it for kids so that they know. And then eventually they get to the point where, as you said, they take over that. And now the coach is giving them that control to be able to conduct their own orchestra, as opposed to the coach standing on the sideline trying to do it.
That's awesome. So I also asked a question when I talked to people: would you rather score 30 points or 6 points and get the W, or score 30 and lose? A lot of kids would take the 30 and lose. And I'm like, what happened to people? Like, you always play to win. You don't play to score whatever. So that bugs me at some level, man. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree. You clearly would rather win. I think that I'd be lying if I said there wasn't a part of me that if I only scored 6, I probably would say I'd like to have a bigger hand in having an impact on winning. And I'd probably like to score more in a win. But if you give me the choice of, it's a binary choice of, I can score 30 and lose, or I can score 6 and win, then I don't think there's any doubt that you'd rather score 6 and win.
Yes. So I just like people that have that, like, you know, an intangible, an X factor of, like, they have that little it that just, they just want to win. So you'll kind of see that when you get some good high school football players, a little bit more contact, get there, they kind of do that. They're a little bit more verbal. It kind of varies a lot. So
what about hate to lose versus love to win? Do you have a thought on that?
Oh yeah. When you play and you let it go, man. You don't carry it with you. You got to play to win. And if you hate to lose, just let it go, because that will eat you up. And I tell people that consumes too much energy. So you always want to be free. Put your time, like, say you and I are talking. If you and I met at the court, you'd be like, hey, Dr. Bob is turning to Jekyll and Hyde. What happened to this guy? When I'm on the court, I'm a different human being. But as soon as I'm done, I let it go. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. I feel like that's how I wasn't necessarily like that as a young kid. And I would definitely take losses a lot harder. It was one thing that when I first started coaching, that was one of the things that probably bothered me more than anything, is team would lose and get on the bus. And I'd be all disgruntled and sitting there on the bus.
That's why coaches get gray hairs, right?
Yeah, oh, you'd be sitting there.
Pull your hair out.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't have any hair left. But, you know, you're sitting there on a bus and kids that just lost a game be joking. And I could not relate to that as a 23, 24, 25-year-old early on in my coaching career. And then as I grew older, you come to realize that that game's already gone. And yeah, you can go back and look at it and figure it out and try to see, hey, what did we do? What can we do differently the next time? But I don't need to sulk and pout to show how much that loss hurt me or meant to me or whatever. And again, everybody handles it in a different way. And I don't think I understood that as a young coach. Whereas now, now at this point in my life, I've got a much bigger, a much better understanding of I got to control the things I can control.
Yes, but also note as a coach, you really cared. That's why you felt that way. But also note, as you were in that coaching, what did we learn? Even though we lost, could we still gain something? So you always want to ask a question. I always ask, like I have a young daughter who's a pretty good hooper. What'd you do today that was good? What could you have done better? Just to have a conversation to keep them in the loop about the game with an emphasis on, hey, how was your hustle? 0 to 10. Okay, I had an 8.5. Why not a little bit higher? Well, I didn't have to, you know, blah, 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 whatever. How'd you pass the ball? So you can always break the game down into components. Once you start getting the components, people can go, oh, there's more to the game, like we talked about before, than just shooting, just scoring. Like you said, how do I move without the ball? It kind of also bugs me why people don't try to just get easy shots. Like, why do I need to have like these crazy three-pointers? I mean, why can't I just, hey, put me in the low block, I'm going to go attack their guard or something.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on that one? Because that one's kind of like, why do we have to make the game so hard or just kind of so vanilla?
Like, that's still a thing that makes me feel like I'm old school, because I've talked to a lot of different coaches on the podcast. I've heard differing opinions, but I've just heard so many coaches say, like, one of the things that forever, I don't think I'll ever be able to wrap my head around it, is it's like a 3-on-1 break. And it's pretty much a guaranteed uncontested layup. And instead those two guys that are running the lanes just flare out for threes. Like, yeah. I know the three goes in sometimes. I know kids can shoot it. And yeah, sure, it's an open three. But to me, I still feel like, why wouldn't we just get the sure two as opposed to guys flaring out for three? I'll never, I don't think, be able to fully comprehend or accept that as a coach or as a fan or just watching the game. It still doesn't make sense to me. But by the same token, you just see how the game has changed and evolved. And I say all the time, like, I could count on one hand, Bob, the number of times that I was involved in a screen and roll as an offensive player or a defensive player during my 4 years of playing Division I college basketball. Yeah. And I can also tell you that I probably never drove to the basket, got underneath the basket, and then turned around and fired the ball back out by the top of the key to someone standing above the 3-point line. Like, that play, that pass didn't exist. Maybe you kicked it to the corner just because somebody cut you off and you had no other option, but there was no way you're going up the way guys do today, where they're right at the rim about to shoot a layup and all of a sudden they just turn and kick it out to the 3-point line. It's just, the game is just completely different from the game that you or I played back in the day anyway.
Well, you and I back in the day, we had pick and roll. Now it's picking, you know, flare. People don't even roll. But my take on that is this, though. I look at it from a different point of view. I'm always concerned about energy. So we have that 3-on-1 break. If I get a layup, I can come back in deep quicker. I can set up. I'm shooting a three in and out. Like, the game's kind of like lost its nuances, I think. It's easy to shoot the threes. And I think that goes back to a lot of people I talk to, it goes back to in the 80s, American coaches went over to Europe. And look at those guys. Look at some – who's been our – MVP in the last 2 years. Where's that guy from in the NBA?
Yeah, he's Serbia, right?
Yeah, well, look at his footwork. Does he even jump high?
Nope.
He has a very good feel for the game. Look at Luka. Where's he from? Some of these guys just have different movements that we've become like a, I call it like spotlight dance. Oh, look at that guy with the ball. Dribble, 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 dribble. So I'll watch players like dribble, dribble, dribble. I love when you play, kick the ball out, start your offense, put people on their heels. Like, we're just shooting threes? Think about that. Back in our day, dribble, 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 dribble did not exist, man.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Simple pass. I always said, as a player and talking to players as a coach, just make the simple pass. Like, the fancy passes look great, and if you're Magic Johnson, super. Make all those kinds of passes you want. But for most guys, if players would just learn to make the next simple pass to the guy who's open, their teams would have so much more success, and so would they as individual players. And they'd be so much more fun to play with, because so often guys just don't make the next play. And it's so fun to watch when you see a team that actually does play together and is unselfish, how successful they can be. And it's funny, my son is playing with an AAU team this spring that honestly has 10 kids who all get some of the things that we've just been talking about in terms of playing unselfishly. It's a good team. It's a talented team, but they play together as well as any group that I've ever seen. And it's 10 kids who all could probably score more than what they do, but because they're willing to give it up, they know the ball is coming back to them. And so it just becomes contagious, as you know.
Yeah. So what you're talking about, so in the NBA, people talk about like the ball has energy, like pass the ball. It is harder to defend when the ball is moving around. Like, if I'm just dribble, it's hard to guard. So if you start dribbling, people can guard you, start moving the ball. And then work with Jamal Crawford a lot. So this is a funny story. So I first met Jamal at Rainier Beach. Then I somehow got involved with George Karl, because they had a kid that was going to be in a Friends of Hoop tournament. This is like probably 1999 or something. He hurt his ankle, was going to be out for a month. So I treat the kid three times. He's able to play his MVP of the tournament. George Karl's like, hey, what did you just do here? Because all my team doctors, 4 to 6 weeks, you did this in three treatments. Like, what's going on here? So talking to Jamal about, why do you always pass the ball, Jamal? He goes, well, I always get it back and I can score. So back in the day, George Karl would always say this: if Jamal Crawford learned how to play defense with his arms, he'd be an all-star first team defender. It always made me laugh, because Jamal was not a defender. But if you ever watch him play, nitty gritty, he would play some serious D with his length. I think he's like 6'6 with like a 7'2 wingspan, which is another weird thing back in the day. We weren't like, hey, how tall are you? You know, you're 6'4 with a 6'9 wingspan. It's like, who ever thought of that stuff? But yeah, it just goes to show how when you kick the ball, you get it back, but you start some momentum and the ball has energy. It kind of gets stuck.
It's so true. And if you've played on any team, it doesn't matter if you played organized basketball at whatever level, or you've just played pickup, when you find the right five guys in the moment that all want to share the ball, that just makes everything come together. And that's what makes basketball such a beautiful sport, is the fact that you can find five guys that just maybe have never even played together, that they all believe in moving the ball. It's funny. I'll say to people all the time, I can go out on a court with somebody and within 30 seconds, I can quickly identify the guys that I'd never want to be on their team again.
Because you got it, man.
They get the ball and they dribble between their legs 17 times. They try to find a shot. And then if they can't find it, then maybe begrudgingly they throw a pass to the next guy. And you're like, man, I never want this dude on my team ever again.
It's a tertiary move. You've got two other moves before that. But that also gets into the premise of, like, when you're playing, like, I'll give you an example. So think of this concept of flow, right? So I did a lot of research on this. And you can actually look this up, with the listeners can. A guy at Indiana University said, by far, the best flow concept we've ever seen is pickup basketball. Because you get five guys that don't really know each other, just want to play together. They want to make like a beehive. So everyone's working together. And I kind of went, man, how cool is that? People don't even know that. Like, basketball should create flow, not an unflow.
It's true. And I think if anybody's experienced it, you know what that feels like. And I don't know that you can necessarily put words on it, but it's sort of like, you just know when you found a group that plays together well. And that can go as simple as, hey, here's five guys I found in a pickup game, versus there's been teams that I've played on that had great flow and worked together beautifully. And then you have other teams where it just feels like everything you do is a struggle. And sometimes you can't always put your finger on the what, why, or the who behind it, but you know what it feels like.
Yes. It's almost like that. It's like, you're kind of like, hey, did the wind just blow? I'm not sure, but I think I felt it. You're like, whoa, there it is. I would say that the guys that have a better flow potential or something for your Suns team is do some breathing techniques before you play and watch how more connected you are. Because when people breathe, they cannot be adrenalized and their brain calms down and it connects people. I've taught this to coaches throughout 20 years. And the coaches that do, they're like, hey, how'd your timeout go? What'd you do? He goes, oh, we just breathe. We just need a breathing timeout. Everything's reset going at it. Pretty interesting, huh?
So tell me what that looks like. If I'm going to do that in, let's say, in a pregame setting with a team, tell me what that looks like.
You can just hold. So you close your mouth, hold your right nostril closed, just breathe through your left nostril. It creates a pump. And in your nose, there's little cilii that will create a parasympathetic state that causes your body to relax. But as you breathe, your whole body goes through that flow cycle. It's like a flush and it relaxes you. So you can try it right now if you want. Hold your right nostril closed. Close your mouth. Just breathe the left nostril. I guarantee you within two or three breaths, you're like, man, I'm more relaxed. What just happened? Feel that?
Yeah, absolutely.
But if you do that together, to me, it goes back to like an orchestra. It's like, whoa, we're all connected again. I don't want disconnected people. I want to be like a wheel that rotates, not a block wheel. So when people breathe, they play better. And add to that real quick, after you're done playing, have kids, players sit down for 3 minutes, do that breathing, but with their eyes closed. It'll reset a parasympathetic state so their body starts to recover, regenerate right after they play. Because I got sick and tired of it. I got to treat a lot of people that have like bad injuries. I'm like, why are people injured? So one of my phrases is always like, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So if you start that process for 3 minutes after you play with your eyes closed, note your eyes deal with 80% of your nervous system. Once you close your eyes, your body can relax. And it's like, I call it inner training. It's like, whoa, why am I relaxed? And when you feel that, that's a great one. And also add to that, people can, like before they play, tap their toes, tap their heels. Why? Because proprioceptively, no one thinks about their feet. They take it for granted. It'll warm you up. Another thing I came across is like, I'll just say this. I moved my daughter back to Ohio a year and a half ago because of the pandemic, blah, blah, blah. But I did some work with the Cleveland Cavaliers, right? And I'm like, why do these guys lead the league in injuries? And one thing I came across was one of the worst, which they made better, one of the worst halftime routines I've ever seen. So what I like for kids to do or anybody is jump rope at halftime a little bit if you have time. It will cause your body to know it's going to do something really quick because people go at halftime and just sit down.
Makes a lot of sense. I think when I hear you talking about doing the breathing for 3 minutes after a game, and I think about the way that kids play AAU basketball today, right? Where you might play 2, 3, 4 games in a day and you've got to get some rest in between. You got to sort of regenerate. And as you talked about, reset your mental state. And so if you could do that in 3 minutes by doing that little activity that you just talked about, and that's going to prevent you from, you know, help you to prevent injuries. And it's also going to reset and help you enhance your performance. To me, that seems like a no brainer.
Maybe we should add on to it. The parents should do it too. If there's AAU, you know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly. I know exactly. Believe me. I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm fortunate because we have some really good parents on this team, but unfortunately I sit with a lot of parents. The last tournament we were at, we had an assistant coach for another team. This was a game we were just sitting and watching, but we had an assistant coach for the one team get up and get in the face of a parent from the other team. And then the players all rushed in, and in the process, a mom got knocked off the bleachers and got hurt. And just, I mean, you're like, man, just get it together. So yes, parents and coaches.
That gets deep though into like, I call that tribal warfare, where people get all adrenalized and they don't know how to get rid of it. It's like when you watch a game, people just get all fired up. You'll see people like tap their toes and stuff. That's wasted energy going nowhere.
Yeah.
Like people don't. So I've really gotten to this concept of like when we talked before, every breath should be like a foul shot. keep that breath going. If you keep your breath going, life will be great. People lose it. They get all kinds of crazy. And I think that's kind of sad how people get into fisticuffs about a game. I mean, come on, man.
I know. It's crazy. It really is. But you see such interesting behavior and you see such a variety of outlooks from players, parents, coaches. And it's so interesting to just sit and sort of be an observer as somebody who's been a player, as somebody who's been a coach, and now sitting there as a parent at some of these tournaments. And you just, I often wish I could just go and have an individual conversation with every single person and just say, hey, first of all, just relax. Like, you're not the one playing, it's your kid. So just relax from that standpoint. And then number two, I think people get so worked up because everybody's always focused on what's next. And they think, oh, if I'm at this AAU tournament, this coach is here, and that's going to lead to this scholarship. And I'm worried about this performance, not because of the performance itself, but because of what the performance itself means to their next stage. And that goes back to what you talked about, right? And the flow state means that you're not worried about what happened before. You're not worried about what happens next. You're right there in the moment and you're just doing what you do in the moment. And I find that there's a lot of people that just can't do that, both from a player, coach, parent standpoint, that everybody's worried about the perception and worried about what's next instead of just enjoying the moment that they're in. And as you and I both know, those moments go way, way, way too fast. I mean, your high school career, if you're a high school player, that's over way too quick. And if you're a parent, you're sitting there watching your kid in the stands, they're going to be done with their high school career before you can even turn around. And so you might as well enjoy it.
You should write a book or do something about that with your insights to assist people. Because one of my goals always is to, I always want to like less suffering in the world and less energy waste. So
yeah,
by having that would be grateful. I've also delved into like essential oils, not a weird way. There's actually part of your brain called the olfactory bulb. If you smell oils, can regenerate your brain. So I will have people smell certain oils. And if they have any angst in them, all of a sudden like, whoa, what just happened to me, man? Why am I so calm? So there's little things that we as humans can do that we just take for granted that they're like little, I don't like the term biohacks, things I've done throughout many years. Like I also learned like working with teams, I have to work on the head coach. If I don't work on the head coach, it's not going to work as well.
Right.
Because that guy's kind of like the alpha. And if I can calm him and he's on his A game, man, the whole team's on his A game.
How have you gone about learning some of the things that you now utilize with your athletes and coaches? What's your process for testing, researching, figuring out what things work, what things don't work? How do you go about doing that?
Good question. It's a little bit of a backstory. So I've traveled the world and I did some time over in Japan with blind acupuncturists. They would literally blindfold me, and for 6 months I'd work with them blindfolded. They would say, hey, feel for the rotten apple on the skin. And I'd be like, first I'm like, what? And I'd be like, wow, it feels like a rotten apple. Then they'd be like, hey, feel for the cotton bud leaf. So I've developed like a 6th and 7th sense where I can just sense things, but I don't believe anything. I don't believe anything. I have to try it myself 1,000 times to make sure it works. So people might tell me something they did. I'm like, that might be great for you, but how can I make this help other people out? So probably 14 years ago, I started working with world-class sprinters. And back in the day, my uncle was a pretty good All-American hurdler, but he wasn't world-class. And these guys, I started going like, their whole workout consisted of 40 minutes. I was like, what? 40 minutes? Like, what? Interesting, right? So I started to look at like, what do people do in the interim of their games? So, you know, they sit around. It's like you're always in a game. You're always kind of playing in a certain realm, but it's like how people move their body. What's their mental state? So I started to study all these different things, and I just kind of put it all together, but always coming from myself first. Like I had to experience it. Then it would be like, how can I give this to someone else? So I became very good at, I call it becoming more aware of their consciousness, like asking certain questions. So it's like, hey, when you play your best, what's going on? How does your body feel? What are you thinking about? All these different things. So it just became a process. But working with, say, world-class track guys, I kind of went, well, guess what? Every sport I know deals with running. So if I can assist their foot to be better, everyone else will be better. So got all kinds of stuff. Again, I don't work. I have fun. I research 24/7. I'm always curious for golden nuggets. I just don't want to do things that don't work. My stuff that I try to do always works in real time. people literally be like, oh my God, I can't believe how I feel. Well, why can't you be like this all the time? If that makes sense to you.
So if you have something that you do with that, let's say somebody comes in and they have a physical injury of some kind, and yes, you're able to restore them back to their full capacity or help them to extend that full capacity, like you talked about earlier.
So give me an example. Let's give me an injury of some sort. Just so I can give you a little bit of a line of that.
Okay. All right. So I'll give you one. I'll give you one for me. So when I was like 22 or 23, I ran into a screen and I did something to my shoulder that it's still around today. It doesn't hurt me on a day-to-day basis, but like I can't bench press with a bar anymore, or I feel it. Or every once in a while, like maybe every like 2 or 3 years, I'll have like a 2 or 3 day episode where the pain comes back from what it felt like when I originally did it. Like I can't lift my arm up. So let's say that I come into you and I say, okay, here's my problem. Like I've been experiencing this for 30 years. All right.
So I'm going to do a very thorough history. I'm going to ask when it occurred. To me, a few things come to mind already. There's a concept people don't know about called tissue tolerance. An injury occurs. Do not assume that tissue is going to go back to its normal length or elongation. It's going to hold some scar tissue. So you got some scar tissue in there that needs to be worked upon so you can get that full range back. You shouldn't have that for that long. Does that make sense?
But yes.
I also study all the world. I have all kinds of different devices. I mean, I'm like an energy guy. Like people are like, what is this? What is that? I have all kinds of things. I also was led into an older gentleman's lineage, 88 generations back in China. I said, why did you let me in? He goes, you're conscious. You understand things. It's not about injuries. It's about not to have them. How do you perform better? So you can also go through Western tests to see what is going on with the shoulder to identify that. And then I can use certain acupuncture points to bring it back in time. And also note, usually your shoulder usually corresponds to the opposite IT band. So I'm going to guarantee you that's tight on you.
Yeah, that makes sense. Makes sense.
So there's different ways to do it. But when I study with these guys in Japan, we started using noble metals. So I have pieces of like copper or silver that people think, oh, well, that's some new age stuff. No, your body's system that's made up with all the fascia responds to noble metals. If you know what you're doing, it will release in real time. I can use this little device. It's like getting 15 massages in 5 minutes. People are like, oh my God, it's gone. What happened? I just restored the tissue back to that stuff.
Yeah, it's super
makes sense. No, hey, I'll be in Ohio. We have to link up. I'll hook you up for free, man.
There you go. That's next time you're here, man. Put me on the list. Put me on the list. That'd be great.
A quick one though. So when I went to Milwaukee, I was supposed to be there for 3 days to work on Sam Caselli at a bad ankle.
Okay.
George Carr goes, hey, I'm gonna give you 3 days. And I go, okay, 1 day he's playing. Then I said, George, who on your team isn't playing that well? He goes, well, Big Dog's been kind of struggling, man. So let me work with Big Dog. He said, what are you can do with Big Dog? I said, you just wait and see. I work with Big Dog. He goes out. I can't remember the exact total. He had like 42 points, 28 rebounds, 38 points, 23 rebounds next game. And then even Big Dog's like, man, I don't know if I can score 40 a night, man. What's going on? I said, Glenn, just be in the game. And Carl's looking at me going like, what's going on? I said, well, George, I have this other idea. It's called swarm theory. Let me treat your whole team and see what happens. I treat his team, and they play the Indiana Pacers. So back in the day, they had a great team. Reggie Miller, the Flying Dutchman, the Davis brothers, tough team.
Yep.
They're beating them 42-10 in the first quarter. George Carl puts up 10. He goes, what the F is going on? He goes, what did you do here, man? So I've done some very interesting stuff. I'll just say at the NBA level, there's a lot of egos, which I am very spirited, but I have zero ego, man. If you called me up at 4 a.m., I would go be at your house to help you out if I could. That's just why I think I was raised by my grandfather, and going back to that Dan Potopsky stuff. I'll link them to that about really caring for people. And when you really care, people know you care. And that's a big one. Cause a lot of coaches even like, hey, it's about you or your kids. Be about the kids, not about you.
Yeah, I agree on that 100%. I think if you're genuine and you care about people, I don't care what field you're in, you're going to end up having more success. And you're also going to attract the kind of people that you want to attract, whether it's as clients or if you're a coach, you're going to attract the right kind of players, that kind of thing. When you do run into somebody who has some resistance, let's say somebody hears this and says like, oh man, guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Is that a case where you're like, hey, this guy maybe isn't right for what I do? Or is there a little speech that you give him to say, hey, why don't you give this a try? How do you approach that if somebody's a little skeptical of
I say what this. You say? you have thought patterns. You have not felt what is going on. So a lot of my stuff is, what do you feel? I'm very good at feedback loops. There's a great term called cognitive cost. I want to get into reducing your cognitive cost. What is your feedback loop? I'm asking all these questions. So you might be like, oh, you know, you're talking. Like I told you, I don't believe anything. So I might read something. I'm like, well, that's great for them. I don't know if I can replicate that. So right. Depending on what the person has, like, I don't know, man, like probably 98% successful with people. But a long time ago, there was a hospital in Seattle where I was an intern where we did work with chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia people. And I could not believe how these people were living life. I was kind of like, what, man? Like, this doesn't make sense. Like, for them to come in for a treatment was all they could do for the whole week. So I got into my awareness about what's the mental game here, right? So I would ask the people, they'd come in, they'd be terrible. I said, what's good about you today? They'd be all mad at me. What do you mean, what's good about me? I wouldn't be here if I was good. I said, no, hold on. You want to have 10% problem, 90% of the goodness is away from you. So I'm always curious about what's going on about people's mental capabilities. Remember, we talked about struggle release. A lot of those people that might not think a certain way are kind of stuck in their own mind. I want to get you out of your mind. That's why your body heals. Just like playing basketball, great flow. And also back then, I used to drive motorcycles, broke my collarbone once I was done. But when I drive a vehicle, it's like I'm flowing. I'm not driving crazy. I just have this like flow about me. I'm just in that natural deal. So I'm always trying to get people into that flow state. And note, last one I'll say is that note the term fundamentals. What do we got in there? Fun. Always have fun in your fundamentals. It just links up.
It does. I think when you can bring fun to what you do, and I don't care, like, if you're at the highest level of professional basketball, and I got to believe that if the game's not fun, then what are we all doing here? And I say that with kids and parents all the time. It's one of the things, and I do my summer camps for elementary school kids. I always start out by telling parents and telling the kids, look, we got three things we want to do. Number one is have fun. Number two is we want you to learn something. Number three, we hope we inspire you to play more basketball. But you go back to number one and have fun. And I always say to parents, look, if you send your kid to basketball camp and they come home every day and they say, man, I'm learning a lot and I'm working really hard, but it's no fun, then what are we doing here? What am I doing for a kid who's 8, 9, 10 years old and I'm making the game so it's not fun? It's a game. The reason why you picked up a ball, the reason why I picked up a ball, it was fun to throw that orange ball through the basket. And that's what made us fall in love with it. And then there's clearly a lot more that goes into it as we go along. But I think it's important to remember, as coaches, as players, as parents, that it should be fun. And sometimes I think we forget about that.
Big time. I would add to that you get a lot of kids that want Division I scholarships, right? All of a sudden they realize this is not fun.
That's so true. I think we had a guy on, Tim Jackson. You know Tim?
Yeah, Timmy.
Yeah.
He was like a urban legend when I was like, I don't know what grade it was. He was like dunking in fifth grade, man.
Yeah. So he went to Youngstown State. But I had him on about probably, I don't know, a month and a half, 2 months ago maybe. And he wrote a book called Understanding College Athletics Through the Eyes of College Athletes. And he talked about exactly what you just said, Bob, which is a lot of athletes and their families don't have a real understanding of what it means to be a Division I athlete. So he interviewed athletes in all different sports and interviewed administrators and coaches and different things, and just trying to get people to understand exactly what that means. And especially nowadays, when you look at the Division I level, what I did when I was at Kent in the summertime, our season ended and literally coaching staff would hand me like a 2-page ditto. Be like, here's your workouts for the summer. We'll see you back here in September. And now those kids are on campus 50 weeks of the year and they're working. And they're working with not just their strength and conditioning coaches in the summer, but they're doing whatever four-man workouts on the floor with the same coaches that they deal with all season. I couldn't even imagine trying to go through the grind of a season and then turn around and a week after my season ended, I'm right back in the gym with the same guys that were yelling at me for 6 months. I couldn't wait when the season ended to go and just play pickup ball and just have fun and get back into that flow state that we talked about.
So note though, look at all the college portal transfers, right? Crazy numbers.
You're like, absolutely. What? Yeah, it's insane.
I'm being recruited again somewhere. Also note, one thing I got to share is that people don't realize when you train a day, if you were to take a little nap after that, you will retain more of that in your body than anything else. If people started looking at studies when people take like little naps like this, lay down for 15 minutes, your brain takes that information, what you just did from a motor point of view, and puts it back into your body. And also, one more thing to that, sleeping is your best training. Do not forget about sleeping. That's when the whole body regenerates. About 4 years ago, researchers at the University of Virginia figured out that there's a big blood vessel in the back of your neck that actually has inside it a lymphatic vessel that people didn't think existed. So when you sleep, your brain's actually clearing things out of your head to make you better. So sleeping, I always tell people, is your best exercise.
That's one of the things that if I had to look at one area of my life since I've become a parent mostly that I'm really bad at, it's getting enough sleep. I just find myself, again, I'm working on podcasting late into the night with my real full-time job getting in the way and being a parent, whatever. So that's one of the things.
A quick add-on, sorry for jumping in.
No,
try that breathing later in the evening. It'll reset you to sleep better. So I recommend that people do that breathing 5 times a day if you want to be optimal.
Okay.
That'll help reset your circadian rhythm, how your body responds to things. And when you breathe, your whole body relaxes. But if you do the breathing before you go to bed, you have more space in your body for your body to move around. And what do we know when people get older? They kind of shrink. When you breathe before you go to bed, gravity's pushing down. When you breathe, you keep more space within your own tissue. And that tissue tolerance opens up.
How long do you do that breathing for? Like if you're going to do that before you go to bed, how long?
3 minutes. 3 minutes. Then when you wake up, do it again, because you'll feel it. When you get really good at it, you actually feel it go down to your feet. Your feet have the biggest pores in the whole body. And when you feel that, like I can say, so I'm whatever my age is, I can still hoop pretty well. Like people go like, man, what's your age? They're like, man, you're 20 years different. But I take care of myself. But I do weird movements after I'm done playing too. People thought I was like, hey, Peter Pan.
What's this guy doing over here on the sideline?
Well, it's kind of like some Curry stuff, man. I didn't get it from Curry. I got it from my track guys. But moving your body a certain way helps you out. But if you do that before you go to bed and when you wake up, your body parasympathetically relaxes. Go to bed, relax. Wake up, relax. Everybody wakes up, you know, I need my coffee, got to hit the alarm, boom, boom, boom. No, man, that's like a slow phase to tune you into the day. And note what creativity comes into you. I always tell kids or players, what's in your gut? Trust your gut. Trust your gut. Don't go in your head. If you get in your head, you're lost. Like I tell like coaches, hey, man, do you coach from your head or your gut? And they'll be like, interesting. It depends on the game. No, if you're always from your gut, you trust your gut, man. It's not going to fail you. You're going to be a lot better with things.
That's really good advice. And I think it's something that clearly when you think about what people talk, they have the morning routine, right? You talk to any self-help expert, and one of the things they always talk about is the morning routine and figuring out what that looks like. And I think the breathing piece of it is something that is super interesting to me. And look, I can tell you right now, I'm definitely going to give that a try and see what it does in terms of how I feel and I'm a person that, again, I don't sleep enough, but I also usually wake up pretty rare to go and get up. And my first thing, at least during the, not as much during the summer, cause doing different things, but during the work year, during the school year, I'm up. And then usually I get a workout in right as soon as I get up and get moving. But I could see where incorporating the breathing piece of it into it could even benefit me even more.
You'll be pleasantly surprised. And what I've come across is that people don't see their breathing. Like you don't see air you breathe, right? So it's like this, like, well, where is that stuff? You take it for granted.
Yeah.
When you start, I also do a thing where I open up people's diaphragms. Like a lot of NFL guys will be like, oh my God, my sleep apnea went away. What just happened? Well, we just unzipped your lungs because they're so tight from all these hits you have. If you just do like little simple things, it really, really, it just helps a lot. And again, like I said, why suffer? Why waste energy? I'm also, in my spare time, I'm writing a book about that. It's basically called Free Health. The premise of the book is 30 chapters, about 4 pages each, about things that you can do just one day of your life that'll change your life to function better. Like walking backwards is very good. People don't think of that. Like doing certain things where you wake up in the day, you go out and see the sun first. Your whole body resets its melatonin and things like that. So I've been around a long time. Like I said, 26 years doing this. And to me, the funnest thing I get out of this whole thing, Mike, is when I work with anybody, when they smile, and I've done a great job, because you know what? I'll smile back, man. I'm not trying to smile, but that's where it's at.
Yeah, that's very cool. And I think just the book, how far away are you from getting it done? Because I think just hearing those two little things, I love those little small things or little small changes that you can make. Because I think so often you get these big picture, like you read a book and there's this big quote unquote plan to revisit yourself and to remake yourself. And I always love like the little things that you can do that make a difference. So here you're saying, hey, you can walk backwards, or hey, you can go out first thing in the morning and get sun. To me, those are the things that are exciting, because I like things that I can implement. I can read it and I can hearing you say, all right, just try this breathing, try 3 minutes of breathing before you go to bed, 3 minutes of breathing when you wake up. Like, that's a 6 minute investment for me to try and see if it works for me. And so those are things that I love. So how far along are you in the book?
So real quick, I had this idea for probably 20 years about free health, but remember, I'm kind of a pattern discriminator. So I've seen a lot of people. So I can see people where they're off. So I say, hey, read this in the chapter. Like, oh my God, that was me. How do you know? Well, I've seen it enough. So two other quick ones from that.
Sure.
Your stomach has no teeth. So please chew your food. When you chew your food, 15 to 20 bites, it's more liquid. Everything is more efficient in your body. Less blood has to go to your stomach and you function better. Okay.
That's a good one, right? Yeah.
The whole book's loaded with these things, man.
I like it. I love this stuff, man. Seriously. I love it. Cause that's those quick little things that you can be like, hey man, I can implement that right now.
And the other one is just off the top of my head. It's like, you can smell like an oil of peppermint, essential oil. It'll change your brain frequency from a beta wave to an alpha wave, which causes you to relax. It's like, what? That olfactory bulb in your nose knows, no pun intended, to change your system just by smells. And again, we don't see it, take it for granted. It's not, and just note, I'm hardcore science guy. 1,000 times I got to try it. I have guys in the NBA, NFL that do this stuff. They're like, dude, it just taps me in, man. Like, but what happens a lot with a lot of these players, they won't tell anyone else. It's like a secret. So it's very, very interesting.
All right, let me ask you this. When you talked about peppermint, so as a teacher, one of the things that always happens is kids are taking a big standardized test. And what do we do at the school? We pass out peppermints for them to eat during their testing. Good, bad,
helps them. So this goes back to a study, like I think it's Cincinnati, where they actually, so I'll go back for a second. In Japan, when you're working, they actually will spray stuff. I didn't get the idea from that in there. So I think it increases your IQ like 19 to like 22%.
Okay.
So I actually had a coach that used to, she came in to see me. We started talking. She goes, peppermint. Oh my God, we eat peppermint patties before games. I'm like, okay, you're into it.
All right. So we're on the right track there at school.
For sure, man.
Keep doing it. All right, good. I like it.
Sugars for kids. How do I want to say it? Back in our day, we didn't have so much Franken food. The food was not made to taste that way, to make you more nutritious. It was made to make you more addicted and to buy it more.
Yeah,
people got to understand that stuff, man.
That's a challenge. I mean, that's a challenge. And I think the other thing too that's interesting when it comes to food with kids. And I say this to my own kids all the time. Like, I don't know about you, but growing up, like, I might have went out to eat to a sit-down restaurant maybe once a month if I was lucky, maybe.
For sure.
Maybe.
Mom was making it, right? Your mom and dad was making stuff.
And now, like, my kids, we probably eat at home more than I would guess most families, but we still are, you know, we'll go out to eat way more than I did ever when I was a kid. And my kids will constantly agitate for, hey, we're going out to eat tonight. It's just like,
get a crock pot. Yep. That's pre-digested food.
Yeah.
That just helps out and it's more nutritious, man.
Yep.
It's like, God, and you get to higher levels of performance higher levels like college and NBA, those little things mean a lot.
That's a separator, right? I mean,
I got a quick story for you. Just,
sure.
Again, as we speak, I just think of stuff. So George Karl brought in Danny Manning, hated him. Like, why do you hate Danny Manning? He didn't go to UNC. He went to Kansas. I don't know if I like this guy. This was later in his career, right? I'm sitting here going like, oh boy, we got to figure out this one. So I go, I'm talking to Danny. Wherever we were traveling, whatever team was, I mean, whatever city. I see Danny, he's always like wheeling this like little luggage bag behind him. I'm kind of like, what's this guy got in there, man? So I go to his room and say, Danny, I'm just curious what you got in that luggage bag. He goes, oh, man, this is my candy bag. So just note how many injuries Danny Manning had. A lot. He had every candy you could think of in his bag that wow. he would eat all the time.
Wow.
And I kind of went, okay, so I'm a big inverse guy. So if he's doing that, what's the opposite of that? I don't want any of that candy, man.
That's crazy. I mean, when you think about professional athletes and how fine that line is in terms of being at your best and competing against the very best in the world, it's kind of amazing. And look, you get it to a certain extent, maybe when guys are young and they don't know. Although I will say that clearly in the world today, guys have no excuse for not being informed. Back maybe when you and I were kids in the 70s, 80s.
Yes.
People didn't, you know, whatever. People didn't realize or understand necessarily all the ramifications of that stuff. Whereas now, it's, I mean, come on.
Well, no, you're making me laugh. I just had another thought. So it's a playoff game against Indiana, and Sam Cassell is eating. Remember back in the day, things called Chunkies?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's eating those, like two of those.
Those,
like,
those Chunky, that was chocolate, right? Those big,
yeah,
thick
chocolate like
bars.
Sam, yeah. He goes, just call me Needles. Hey, Needles. Playoffs, man. I got to be different. I'd be like, what? So right before the game, I see him going to the bathroom like five times because of his Chunky. I kind of went, okay, that's interesting, man. So another quick add-on is transdermal sprayed magnesium on the feet will cause more elasticity, and it buffers stress all the time. Magnesium buffers stress. People need more magnesium, but not in the form of citrate and oxalate. Those are terrible forms of citrate. There's like 22 forms of magnesium. So like once we start talking, I just got to like tell the things that I do all the time with people. But magnesium dramatically helps people be more relaxed. It'll actually add more bounce to your step.
So what's the source of magnesium?
So you can have like a spray on. It's called like a transdermal. You can spray it on your feet.
Okay.
Note that is very slippery, but you put it on, you'll be like, man, why do my feet feel so springy? Or you can take like a liquid form. Well, I'll say you can take a pill form of magnesium, but not citrate. Probably glycinate is probably the best form, or ornate for the body. And when the body has more magnesium, it runs all of these Krebs cycles and everything. So more magnesium equals buffer. I guarantee you, if you and I went to talk to those parents that got in that little skirmish, low in magnesium. Why? Bad food. Your body has to buffer it, and stress takes up magnesium. And just note, during our pandemic, people became very, very, very hypersensitive. I think it's because they lost magnesium because of stress.
Yeah.
The body produces more through the kidneys. It goes out and you excrete it.
Yeah, I believe it. I think the stress piece of it, the pandemic certainly contributed to everybody's stress, depending on how you looked at it. And I tried to look at it and find the positives every day and do the same with my kids. But certainly I know it affected a lot of people in a negative way without question. Bob, I feel like we have like four more hours that we could go. We're coming up on an hour and a half.
Well, we're good, man. I just want to say one more thing.
Yeah, go for it.
I created this product. I'm not a – just note, if anyone knows me, I'm not a seller. I don't even advertise, man. People just find me word of mouth. That's just
tell us about the big toe yo-yo.
So I worked with these track athletes about 13 years ago, and I noticed that if their big toe was off, they couldn't run as well. So I kind of went, if their big toes are off, how's the rest of society's big toes? So I figured out the big toe is off in almost everybody. So I had this idea for this big toe yo-yo for about 12 years. I met a guy about 6 months ago who's an MMA fighter. I did some work on him. He goes, listen, man, I don't know what you did to my feet. It's the best they felt ever. And I said, well, what I did was something I could do manually, but I have this idea for this yo-yo. And he goes, well, just by having my family makes these devices or like products. So I gave him the idea. It basically goes around your big toe and other toes. We can actually flex your foot and you will feel more release in the big toe. And think of the big toe like your thumb. Think of your thumb was off. That's the way most people's big toes are off. So once you activate that, there's 5 layers of fascia that attach to the big toe that once you release it, people literally feel like they're walking on air. And again, let's go back to my premise. Why suffer? Why waste energy? I've come across, people always talk about your core. I'm like, well, I think your actual number one thing, first of all, is your platform, which is your feet, because you're always on them and we take them for granted. I always tell women, great toenails, great shoes, men, cool shoes, ugly feet, right?
Yep.
So you can use this big toe yo-yo before you compete or after, but it will give you more range in your whole body by releasing that fascial plane.
Where can people get it?
So I, again, I'm not a whatever business guy, but I guess I got to be to help people out more. At the Energetic Sports Laboratory, no, sorry, energeticsportslab.com. There's a little piece in there about it and some YouTube stuff. We just had supply chain issues getting it, but everyone that's used it, all my pro guys, college guys are like, dude, what the heck? I'm like, listen, man, it's more about you feeling it, not about you telling that to me. Like I had this woman that came in with her husband, former college football player. He was like, dude, I haven't felt this good in like 20 years. It was just interesting. So I just wanted to say that. Thank you for letting me say that to you, man.
Absolutely. All right. Before we get out, I want to give you a chance to share how people can reach out to you. How can they find you? Email, whatever. I know you already just shared the website, social media, whatever you got, throw at me and then I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Oh, same one. EnergeticSportsLab.com or gclinic1@gmail.com. I think I need a bigger presence on that stuff, but literally I'm so busy. I don't have time for those things, man. I'm just having fun doing my thing. So we can talk.
There we go. Dr. Bob, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule to join us tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure getting a chance to talk to you, and some of the ideas and things that you brought to the table are things that we don't often always think about, or the things that we haven't always discussed here on the podcast. But I think you brought a lot of interesting things that people can do, people can try. And clearly anybody who's listened to this all the way through has to be at least a little bit intrigued by some of the things that you're doing. And hopefully you'll get some people that'll reach out, and hopefully we can make a difference and get people to tap into maybe some of the things that you're talking about that they don't always think about conventionally when it comes to improving their performance and injury rehab and that kind of thing. So again, thank you for your time. Appreciate it. And to everyone,
I just wanted to thank you that it's like I'm talking to a long lost brother. And I really mean that. You know what I'm talking about in the basketball realm, man.
For sure. Yeah, I appreciate that. And again, this podcast has been a labor of love. I'm glad you've been able to be a part of it. It's cool that we were able to connect and that we've got this shared past that we can go and reflect on. And I think that I'm going to talk to you in a second about our post-pod conversation here. But what we always hope is that some friendships develop out of this. And I have no doubt that that's what's going to happen here. So again, Bob, can't thank you enough. Really appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.